Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
Running the Point with Jason Carey on the ATL Podcast Network, the intelligent podcast. Welcome to Running the Point with Jason Carey. Today, my guest, and I'm going to let him, because I always introduce this guy, and then I think about how people might speak about me, how they describe themselves. So I know him as an award-winning national poet. But if you were to describe yourself, my man, I want to welcome Dichotomy to the show. How would you describe yourself, man?
Oh, man. I'm a poet. I'm a writer. I'm an author. I'm a brother. Lover of people and the community. I'm just an average guy, man. Just an average guy trying to take advantage of the opportunities that he's been blessed with, and live life to the fullest, man. Enjoying every moment.
No doubt. Far from average. So we won't say that, because that average guy is not running around with the awards and doing the things that you're doing.
I'm a humble
with people.
Average guy.
Exactly. And see, that's the thing. I would say that someone will describe me and be like, yeah, he's the hype man. I want to tell everybody, stop using that word. Stop that. Because the hype man is somebody that echoes somebody else's thoughts. I just want to let y'all know that.
Right.
The hype man was the guy that I had on stage with me when I was rapping, and he would fill in so I can catch my breath. That's right. Who the hype man is. Don't call me a hype man. I'm way more talented than just the hype man. So, but that's why I asked that question, man. Not a hype man.
Not at all. So
today we want to have this conversation today, and I want to have with you, brother, because again, you're my brother, and I respect you highly and respect your mind. So today, what we're talking about is that we hate us. When I say we, I say black people tend to sound like we actually dislike ourselves. Not even dislike. I use the word hate on purpose. It's a strong hate for ourselves. And we don't even understand that that's what we're doing. You hear people say, well, I ain't gonna go over there because too many black people live over there. Or I don't want to come to that club because, it's full of black people. Is there going to be just black people? Or recently in the news, these NFL players talking about white women being better than black women. And I don't hear that in other communities. I will say that I'm not in all those communities on a regular basis. So I don't know what they're saying. But I venture to say from my experience, that's not what's happening. Our people tend to hate ourselves. And I'll give a story. And now I'm going to come to you. There was a mall built in our town. I'm from Richmond, Virginia. It was a mall built called Short Pump Mall. New area of town. It was a nice, pretty nice mall, outdoor mall, some pretty nice stores. Price point was fine. It was a little higher than maybe some of the other malls. And I walked by a older black lady, and she's like, man, I don't know if I'm going to come back here. This is the white people mall. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? This the white people mall? You're automatically putting yourself on a lower level than anybody else. You go to work, you make money, you got, how is this the white people mall, which I don't understand. That's from my point of view. I see that we hate us, and we're going to have to change that. But from your point of view, tell everybody where you're from, first of all, and then from your point of view.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Nashville, Tennessee. Mm. So I grew up in the inner city there, went to a predominantly lived in a predominantly African-American community, mm-hmm. went to a predominantly African-American school until I got to the fifth grade. So in the fifth grade, I had tested and went to a magnet school. And so that was the first time that I had exposure to a bunch of different very diverse cultures. So there were people from Thai, Chinese, Polish, all of these other things. In Nashville.
Wow.
Yeah. So the experience for me was a little bit different because every time I went home, I went back to the inner city into that. But on a daily basis in school, that's kind of what I was exposed to. Mm. And the one thing that I saw, right? And so when you say we hate people, we hate ourselves, I could say that may be true to a certain degree, but I think that a lot of that really comes from, what happens to us very early on, right? Mm. So if we look at, how we're raised and kind of the stereotypes that we learn very young and unknowingly perpetuate and continue to perpetuate as we get, as we get older, I think that's, kind of the root of the issue, right? The manner in which a lot of other cultures rear their children and the thoughts, you know, that, you know, and the positive affirmations that they give, you know, versus us. And a lot of it, you know, goes far beyond us. Right. It goes, you know, from slavery time and then what was going on with the civil rights and all of that. So I think, you know, that does exist in our community. But I don't know if I would lay, you know, solely lay the blame like on this particular, you know, generation per se. I think we probably perpetuated more. But I think that this is something that, you know, come as a result from a long, long years ago. Yeah.
So definitely. It comes back. So that we learn. This is a learned behavior. You're saying that. And that's what I think as well. There's generational effects of people saying, you know, I can't do that. I'm not gonna be able, you're not gonna be able to do that because you're a little black boy. I'm dark skinned. It's not a secret. Everybody can see that. I have dark skinned sisters, and my dad is a dark skinned guy. And so when he was growing up, he is a very dark guy, and so he has a darker pigment on the inside of his hand as well. He grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia, 50s and 60s. And they would say to him that, Jack Carey, you don't wash your hands. He like, this is white teachers. You don't wash your hands. He's like, well, I did wash my hands. No, you're dirty. That's what she would say to him. And so this is beating his head. So you're saying that in front of students. So now what they going to call him? They call him Black Jack. Now you got to deal with that on a regular basis. His mother put something else in him, though. His mother would tell him he was the darkest of them all. But his mother would have to tell him when he was little that he was a good-looking guy. He was gorgeous. My dad's a great-looking guy. But he would be really telling him, really put that confidence in him, so he'll grow up with that confidence. In turn, he did the same thing to us. I got confidence out the roof. Isn't it? I have no problem, ever had a problem.
Right.
But he would do that to him. He would do that to me, and my youngest sister is probably the darkest of us all. And did the same to her. Her confidence is out of here. She's full-figured woman, dark-skinned, and she is... Her confidence out of here. She knows she's gorgeous. Right. She's a beautiful girl. But I say that to say that it's unfortunate that we even had to go through those exercises, because those exercises were done because you're going to leave that house and face something out in society, a social issue. And unfortunately, we're still dealing with that. I heard recently a little four-year-old came home crying. She was like, I don't want to be dark-skinned anymore. I don't want to be. And I'm like, what the hell is that about? You know, and you were saying that just a generational, it came from time and time again. But we got to change it. And the question is, how do we do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the difficulty in this, right, is that it comes from so many different facets. Mm. So you have, you know, society that is, you know, kind of, you know, like you said, it started with the teacher, so that they are beating that into your brain from that standpoint. You've got, you know, just social classes that beat that into your head, and then we have each other, right? So, you know, we're doing it to ourselves on top of society, you know, kind of doing it in that instance, right? And so it's a very difficult thing, and it's just like anything else, right? It really kind of starts at the home, right? It starts with your, you know, your parents being there and them instilling that confidence in you. The challenge is that we are facing, you know, dire issues in the home as well. You know, 3 out of 4 African American kids come in a single family home. You know what I mean?
So
that's just what it is, right? So it's like, that's where it needs to start. Like, that's where the confidence is going to come from. That's where the belief system that you're going to be able to be anything is going to come from. That's when you instill in them the need to watch out for, you know, others in their community like them, and that we need to kind of band together and do all of that. The core of it is going to come from there, and then it kind of grows from that. But when you are, you know, in an issue where, you know, 3 out of 4 kids are in a single parent home, that single parent is just trying to keep, you know, the lights on and keep your head above water, then it's a change. So I don't want to, I know you asked me for the solution, right? And I don't want to just go through all the problems, but that's really kind of what it is that we're facing. So now it becomes incumbent upon people like yourself and myself to start reaching into the community and talking to those people, right? So I think that's where it kind of comes from. Like, we have to take a greater role for those of us who have that confidence, who have seen the other side, in going back, and whether it be mentorship programs or whether it just be going out and talking to kids in schools or whatever it is. But we gotta catch them early. One of the interesting things about this time in particular is if you look at, you know, the civil rights era and all those, this is the first real time where I think there isn't a clear-cut voice that represents the African-American people, right? And so what you have is a lot of different pockets of people with different ideas on what they should do, but there's there's not a unity that's there. And I think that's really kind of what's lost. It's amazing to me when you look at you know, civil rights and the bus boycott in Alabama, that you were able to get an entire city of people for over a year's time, 381 days, I believe it was, to not use any public transportation whatsoever, like none. Like and there was not a single black person that, that crossed the picket line. Like, that's what it was. And so now we can't even get everybody to agree on, you know what I mean, what we're going to eat for dinner. Like, well, I mean, so it's
real.
And that's the challenge. There's not a clear-cut voice. So it's really going to have to start at the home. If it's not at the home, you're going to have to do it at the community level, and it's going to have to grow outwards.
So you're saying we don't have nobody to listen to. We don't even have anybody to listen to, no one to follow. And when we did have who should have been a figurehead, we were infighting about that. You got Obama in office, and whether you agree with politics is one thing. I'm talking about this brother's, the symbolism of his position should have been strong enough to be a driver of other things. I think it did a little bit, because that's why I was excited about when he first went to office. I said, people were like, well, you don't know what he's going to do. I don't really care what he could do. I didn't care. He could be messed up totally. What I know is that for 8 years, there were people who had never seen a white president, and they seen themselves in him. So now you ask a little boy to draw the president, what would he draw at that point? Before that, you asked me to draw the president. I'm grown. You know what I'm saying? I would have drew a white man with a red tie on. You know what I'm saying? So I think that was that's off. But I wanted to say that because what you just said about not having somebody to nobody listen to, and that's real. And I never looked at it like that, but I think you're right about that.
Yeah, I mean, the united voice is kind of gone. And to your point, right, one of the interesting things, if you kind of – we're talking about the difference in cultures, and I'm really kind of engrossed probably more in politics and government now than ever before. But here's the interesting thing about politics. Like, we as a community, as African-Americans, can learn a lot about politics, because I will tell you that there are a large number of Republicans who probably do not agree with or like our current president. However, they are – pretty much they are going to present a united front, like regardless of what it is, right? So whether you agree with, you know, whether you agree with Obama or not, right, what we would have been able to accomplish if we had, you know, yes, there's going to be some infighting, but like you said, the symbolism behind it and what we should have been able to accomplish, what we should have been able to use in order to proliferate a message, we didn't take advantage of, you know what I'm saying, from that point. And I think that's really kind of the biggest thing. It's like you said, there's certain stereotypes that we have. It's like, oh, well, you know, that's a black owned business, so the customer service is going to be bad, or whatever. Just, you know, stuff like that, that we may be doing it in a joking manner, but innately we're continuing to perpetuate that stereotype. And then
Them people got kids,
right?
Them people saying that in front of their little kids, and they'll grow up. I got people that I know now, friends of mine, and they say stuff, and I had to pull their coattail a little bit, like, hey man, don't say that,
right?
You know what I'm saying? Because what you're saying don't represent even the circle that you're in, so it don't even make sense for you to say that. You know, and so, and if you're not doing anything to change that, that's what I feel like. If you're not doing anything to change the perception of that, then you're a part of the problem.
Right.
And so, saying, going back to just the overall topic of us hating, us hating us, and giving examples, we've given some examples from that. How did you overcome that? Because it's very easily for you from a background, it would have been very easy for you to say, you know what? I don't like what this looks like.
Right.
I want to be something else. How do you overcome that?
I don't even know that I would say I've completely overcome it. You know, I think it's something I continue to deal with and I'm challenged by. My situation is a little bit interesting because, you know, for those who don't know me, I am, you know, a black guy, not necessarily as dark, but I've got a beard, got locks, and I work in corporate America, in IT as a regional director. So I manage 12 engineers across 4 states. Now, if you look at typical IT and really corporate America in general, especially those in positions of leadership, they do not have the same appearance, right, that I have.
Correct.
And so
they often ask you to change your appearance.
And they have, right? And it's been said. And one of the things when I first started interviewing for a leadership position, one of the white guys pulled me to the side, and we had a fairly, you know, good relationship. And so he was like, do you think that your appearance, because I interviewed for a regional director position 3 times before I finally got one. And he was like, do you think that your appearance is keeping you from being able to get that role? You've been working for the company for 10 years. You've done all of these things, and yet you haven't had the role. Do you think that they're apprehensive? Because when you're in leadership and you go see customers, you are now representing the company, right? So do you think that they are apprehensive about having you being the representative of the company being in front? I was like, you know what? They probably are. You know, that may be the case. But for me, I felt like he was like, I don't want you to win the battle but lose the war, right? So it's like, yes, you can be in corporate America, you can have locks and do whatever, but if you don't ever get that job where you can make those decisions of hiring and firing and help, you know, the people from that perspective. And I just felt like I can do it my way, right? Now, granted, it took me another 4 years before I finally got that role, right? Yeah. And I probably could have done it earlier, but I wanted to do it my way. And now, you know, when I go into those meetings, that's the case. And when I go to career fairs and I talk to kids and I, you know, tell them, hey, look, you know, this is what I'm doing, and I'm able to stay true to myself and be able to do that. But it's not an easy task, because one of the other things is, like, you know, you can control a lot that happens within the family structure. But mm-hmm. then once you get outside of that, like, how do you control that? Right. And so mm-hmm. a lot of times we hate ourselves because we don't see a lot of positive images of ourselves, mm-hmm. whether it be in the media. If you look at, you know, I know that there's a strong push now, but dolls and cartoons and movies and everything else. Right. It's just
people,
like,
don't realize they even being controlled like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't
definitely
realize they're being controlled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's you know, it's interesting if you look at the, you know, like the Academy Awards, right? Mm. So Denzel can't win it for his role in Fences, but he can for, you know, being a bad cop in Training Day, right? So it's like, even just, you know, even if you look at it from that perspective, and it's so subconscious, like, we don't even really realize that that's the case, that those are the images that are being applauded, you know, by ourselves and by, you know, the rest of mainstream America. And it's like, we have to do something to try to change those images, both inside and outside of the home.
Marsala Ali won it, and he was a drug dealer in Moonlight. He was a drug dealer.
Right.
And I'm like, what? he wasn't even in the movie that much. But anyway, so you hit on something talking about the dolls, and so I was going to go into that, just the images that are controlled. Now, to anybody that's listening to it, because people tend to listen to this and be like, this is a racist podcast. It has nothing to do with that. It's really about education and just a self-love that I think everybody should have, no matter what your race is. So I just want to put that out there. With the dolls or some of the images on television, you're watching, you're like, there ain't no brothers on this show. And some people they don't care about that, but I'm like, there's a reason. There's a reason why there's nobody that represents me watching me on this show. I think that is what's funny is what they're doing on television now. Again, not against anybody else, but they're including, it has to be, it'll be one white girl, or one white girl, or one black person, and one gay person on every show. It's always got to, that's the new black. It's the new nigga is that. They got to put that person in there to now, and I think they're forcing that on us too. But nonetheless, going back to the self-hate, I want to make sure I stay on task. You guys keep me on task on this. But I think it's important for us to pay attention and call out those subtleties, and then call out those subtleties to the people that we're mentoring, people that if you're a parent, people that you're raising, say, hey, let me point this out so you see what's happening. Because what I'm seeing now, take this area, take Atlanta itself. Atlanta is very diverse, but there are certain areas that are predominantly something. What I see going out, I'll go out in Lawrenceville or go out in Norcross area, and I'll notice the kids that play on the team, it'll be a predominantly white area, and they'll be like, all right, I got a couple black kids on the team. And the parents are steadily trying to keep up with the other people on the team. The other parents, they're trying to be them. And I'm like, I don't understand why you're trying to be them, although you live out here. You know what I'm saying? What you're teaching your kid is that white is right. I absolutely hate that. You know how many black people think that white is right? They'd be like, nah, I'm going to do it the white people way. You heard people say that before? Right. Yeah, man, we're going to be on white people time today. What? What are you talking about? I know poor white people. I know late white people. You got white criminals, white murderers, rapists. You got all of that. But first thing that somebody jump on and be like, yeah, it was real white today. Or I was dressed white. Or I talk white, so it's proper. Right. Someone might say it to you because you're articulate.
Right.
Man, you talk mighty white. What does that mean? Again, I think that's us perpetuating the hate for ourselves, and it's something that I want to stop. And so where I wanted to go to, and you had mentioned to it, alluded to it earlier, is about the leadership. We are our leaders. We are seen the most. Our voice is heard all the time. We have our own circles, and we have connected circles. But it's our job, I think, is to lead those folks. And my question is, do you feel that way?
Yeah, no, I definitely feel that way. I definitely feel like we have a responsibility. And kind of really the more that I sit and talk to this, I'm going to challenge you just a little bit on this. And so I don't know that I would necessarily go so far as to say that it is a hate for ourselves as much as it is a lack of understanding and lack of knowledge, right? And to your point, so when I was going through these issues and trying to find my way and being what I thought was true to myself with the locks and the beard and not wanting to be clean shaven or what the image that they wanted me to be. It wasn't because I hated who I was or I hated, what I looked like. It was that, from a very early age, we are taught that this is what is right or this is what is proper or this is what is good. Mm-hmm. And so that is what we are going to be. One thing can be good without the other thing necessarily being bad or, atrocious from that perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, we are, black folks are in this existence. We, do have these negative connotations associated with us. And when you first started off, you was like, you used the word hate, then you backed off of a little bit, and you're like, no, I'm going to use the word hate.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm going to say, I don't know that it's necessarily hate. Like when I look at, a lot of the young girls and the kids that I talk to that are struggling with themselves, from a dark skin, light skin, black, white, perspective, just kind of being in those environments. I think it's that they weren't told. They weren't shown. They didn't believe that, black can be beautiful or that a black person can be president or the black person can have locks and be in corporate America or do all of those things. Mm-hmm. So I think that really when I graduated college, I was like, man, if I could make a job making $30,000 a year, I would be happy. Right now, I got a college degree and I only wanted to make $30,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Why was that? It was because I didn't know any better. Mm-hmm. I wasn't exposed to anybody who was making six figures. I didn't know that it was possible to make six figures, so I was happy with being able to do that. And so if we look at our communities, right, it's just like, okay, we're around other people like us. And the one thing that we don't do, we don't like to compliment each other. Like, it's always like a battle. What I'm saying? It's like, I can't be like, hey, man, that was a fly-ass suit you had on or whatever. A woman can't be like, yo, that's a nice pair of shoes. They're like, who she thinks she is. Mm-hmm. So there's all of these constant negative connotations, right, associated with it, right? So I think that we have to love ourselves, but we also have to be comfortable with showing love to other people and giving them the confirmation and affirmation that they aren't getting in other facets of society.
So the challenge is to our brothers and to our sisters is to speak positivity into other people's lives, especially your young brothers and sisters. You see them accomplishing something, pick them up. You know what I mean? I get a lot of positive text messages or positive inboxes. That happens for me, but I don't know that happens to everybody. I'm visible. You're visible. I don't know if it happens to the average Joe that may have got a promotion or hey, man, I see you bought a new car. Right? It's not easy. You bought a new car. So, hey, man, good job or good luck. Keep on pushing to what you're doing.
Yeah.
I have no problem telling a young lady that she's pretty. I'm not trying to holler at her, nothing. Mainstream, the big girl or the really skinny girl, whatever, not supposed to be. It's not quote unquote beautiful, but if she's pretty, she's pretty. Tell her that.
Right.
But that's from my upbringing. Like you said, that's something that was taught to me. It was not the other way around.
Yeah, so. we're gonna have to continue to push that. I have a lot of my friends who are teachers, and I have the opportunity to go and speak at career fairs and talk to different students. And it's always funny, right? Because they'll say that this particular class, like when you're going to the career fairs or whatever, and you go and you get ready to talk to the kids, and they'll say, okay, this class, the teacher will pull you to the side and be like, hey, this class might get a little rowdy, and they might not pay attention. They don't really care, whatever. And then when you get in there and you talk to them and you show some level of interest in them, then they're attentive. They have a whole bunch of different questions, right? So it's like there's a perception of of kids and whatever. But once I think that goes for any human being, right? Once you invest the time and the effort and the energy into them, and they understand that where you're coming from is genuine, then the response that you're going to get is going to be completely different. I think that's what we do. We don't invest a lot of time in ourselves and in our communities and in those around us, because if you take a group of kids and you you show them that you care. And I hear this from, you know, a lot of my teachers, friends who are teachers all the time. It's like, once that's the case, then those kids, you know, are like, hey, you know, here's what's going on. They tell you all the business. This is a problem going on. And it becomes overwhelming for the teacher. Mm-hmm. But you see that there's a desire there. Like, it's not that they don't want to learn. It's not that they don't care about school. It's not any of those things, right? It's just a matter of investing that time and effort. And I think the problem with our community is that we're just not present, right? We're just not there. Mm. We're not visible.
We're not present.
Right. Mm.
I think you're spot on with that. Again, we talk about how things are going unnoticed, that not being present, the breakdown of the family that you said that you had. I know for me, growing up, we sat down and ate dinner together all the time. Now, as a kid, you don't even think that's important. Then you get older, or you talk to your classmates, you're like, I don't ever eat with my parents,
right.
or what have you. And so you look back at the value in those conversations, the relationship that was built with my pop or with my mom because of those moments. We got to pay attention to all those things. I just think it's so many bullet points, as you kind of alluded to earlier. It's just, you could go through all the issues. It'd be a long conversation about all the issues or checking all the bullet points. But I think that if we all take our personal responsibility of some of these things, take your responsibility and just be aware. I think that's the big thing that as black folks, I see a lot of people as a whole are unaware of a lot of things. We just let things happen to us instead of making things happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, the big part of that is really kind of twofold. One is that we have to realize that if we're not going to, you know, teach our kids these things or teach our community these things, they're going to pick it up from somewhere, right? So it's just like, if you don't talk about your kids about sex, and they're going to be talking to somebody in school or one of their peers who's going to tell them something that is completely inaccurate, you know, from that perspective, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if we don't teach our kids, hey, you can be black and you can be successful and you are beautiful and you are handsome and all these things, and they're going to go out into society, and society is going to shape their image of what beauty should be, right? And we don't want to do that, because obviously that's not going to be beneficial for them in the long term, mm-hmm. right? So I think the big thing is that we have to understand that. The second thing is that as our community, we don't necessarily embrace our history, you know. If you ask any young Jewish kid, they will be able to tell you about the Holocaust, right? Like, they know about that very early on, and that is instilled in them, and they, you know, the culture and how the Jewish dollar stays within, you know, its rim, within, you know, like
eight times
before it goes out, and we don't, you know, we don't do that. It's crazy that you can talk to kids now these days and they act like the civil rights was a long time ago. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, man, that's just
200 years ago.
Exactly. Like it was not a long, it wasn't a very long time ago.
And so you got this right.
Like, when you have that disconnect, right, then they don't understand the value of the opportunity that they have. I remember my economics teacher told me that our generation was the first generation that was expected to have less than the generation before us. So we were the first generation that was going to have, you know, even though we have a greater amount of opportunity, right, we were expected to do less. So you see, you know, kids who are a lot older still staying with their parents who don't own their own home or you know, whatever, much like, you know, all of our parents had a home very early on, right? And so what happened? Where did the teaching of finances and economics and our history and culture and the importance of family, where did the breakdown come from? Where, you know what I'm saying? Because I think that's important.
You hit on it with the history, man. It's people that are, there's adults that the history is not important. Now, I'm from Virginia. So history is beat into our head all the way, all the time, from home to American history to African American history. All of that is kind of beat in your head. But I go and I had these conversations with other people, and history, they lost on history. I mean, I don't like history, and I don't think it's something you should kind of sweep away. You know what I'm saying? Because if you don't know, you'll repeat it also. And that's one of the things. But also, kind of understand and have respect for the journey, for the opportunity that you were given that came from something. I talk to people about the Trail of Tears all the time, and they were like, yeah, those were the Indians. I want y'all to kind of look that up. Them was black people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Black Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma wouldn't happen. Yeah.
And even, you know, and even if you take it to, you know, more, I don't want to say modern or recent times, but one of the things that I used to do when I was coming up is I used to just sit and talk to like my grandmother and my grandfather, and they would tell me stories just about like, yeah, you remember that that swimming pool down there? Well, you know, we couldn't swim in that swimming pool, right? And then, and you know, this is 30, 40 years ago, you know, 50 years ago from that perspective, and I think that that is really kind of lost. So our youth lack a respect for our elders, right, and the respect for, you know, the authority and a lot of things that, that come along with that. And so a lot of that is lost. So that, you know, the reverence that you have for the journey, because once you understand what people, you know, did, like if anybody talks to their parents, like, man, you know, my mom worked 4 jobs, 5 jobs. So I know that's going to, I want to go and work even harder because I want to make sure that I can take care of her. Right. So if you, if they really understood like what it took for us to get to this point, I think it changes your perception as to what you want to do and what you want to try to accomplish as a result to be able to take advantage of those opportunities.
It is, man. I think we find, finding a solution is the thing. I think it, it just comes from stuff like this conversation, to put it on other people's mind. Put it on other people's mind about this thing. And to not walk around. I don't want people to hate themselves. You know what I mean? I want people to find value in themselves and to perpetuate the value instead of perpetuating the negative stereotypes that we have in our community. So when we leave this, I don't know if I'm going to leave, but still thinking from this conversation with you, I don't know if we still, I can still say we hate us, but there's there's some strong dislike, or just there's not strong dislike, there's some, there's lack of knowledge.
Yeah, there's a lack of knowledge of self. And here's the deal. You can have a lack of love for yourself without hating yourself. You know what I'm saying? So I think that there are some instances where we do lack self-love, and that's why we tend to allow certain things to happen to ourselves. That's why we compromise on certain things. That's why we deal with certain things that normally wouldn't, you know, because there may be a lack of self-love there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we hate ourselves, you know, per se, right? I think it all starts with us individually. And then, you know, like you said, it, your things like confidence, those things are addictive, right? It's like people kind of gravitate towards that. And so we have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to snatch up a, you know, a young dark-skinned boy and be like, look, you know, this is kind of what it is. And this is you know, look at me, and I'm handsome, and I'm suited and booted and all of these other things, and kind of impart that into them and continue to, because it's something that, you know, like you say all the time, you have to hear something 7-8 times before you really remember it from that perspective. And so it's not something that can be casual. It needs to be something that is consistent. They need to be able to continue to see consistent people, and that's the biggest thing I think, and why it's so important for like people like yourself and myself, right? Obama was good from a symbolic perspective, but he wasn't accessible, right? And so when you go and you are talking to a kid and you're in a classroom, that you, that kid is accessible. He sees, here is someone in front of me who is doing what I want to do or being what I want to be, and he's all the things, you know, from that perspective, and it gives you a different perception, you know what I'm saying, a different perspective. There were, I'm sure that there was a bunch of black guys that made more than $30,000. I never knew him, you know what I'm saying? I never knew him from that perspective, and now, you know, to be able to talk to guys who are millionaires and billionaires, and it's like, okay, like I get it, I understand that they're accessible. I've talked to them. It's not something I'm reading about, it's not something I see on TV, and that says, okay, it is tangible, it's realistic, I can achieve that too. So I think that's why it's important for people like ourselves to be out and be visible on a consistent basis. They can say, hey, you know, here is entertainment extraordinaire, and he's in plays, and he's doing radio, and he's doing all these things, and he's right here. Like, I can talk to him, I can call him, shoot him an email, or do whatever. I think that's why it's important on a local level for us to, you know, to continue to push that forward, push that message.
Word, there it is, man. What you got, I want people to, when you're on the show, I definitely want people to be able to follow up, because they get a different side of us from something like this. They go from seeing you doing poetry, or although you speak very intelligently in the poem. So tell them how can they follow you?
Yeah, so all social media is at Dichotomy Poetry, D-I-C-H-O-T-O. MYPOETRY. So Dichotomy Poetry, that's Snapchat, Facebook, one of the other stuff, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. So yeah, you do that, you can follow me there. So
they have do you have anything coming up? Because we just did Oral Fixation, which is amazing, dog. I didn't talk to you to tell you that it was an amazing event, brother. And if you've never attended or don't know anything about it, that's one of the reasons you need to follow this guy, because it's only going to get bigger. I see it at the Fox, man.
Yeah.
I see
yeah.
this thing like at the Fox or something, brother. I see some big things with that that brand for you. So, man, congratulations
on that.
Thank
you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So follow my man Dichotomy. Anything coming up new? You got anything coming up?
No, man. I'm just trying to recover from that, right? True. So that's done. I'm gonna breathe a little bit. I'm gonna do it again in the spring. I usually try to do it twice a year. So, but no, man. I'm continuing to write and perform, and we got to get this play done and some other projects. But you know, outside of that, just gonna continue to push forward, man.
There it is, man. So this is Running the Point with Jason Carey on the ATL Podcast Network. Appreciate y'all tuning in. See you next time.